Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of KCBX and our program hosts. This week, in the second of a two-part series, co-executive directors Connie Alexander and Audrey Gamble join host Lata Murthy to talk about Gateway Educational Services. Restaurateur Fabian Tafera joins during the second half of the show to talk about Ebony Slow and how you can help its future on California's Central Coast. Now let's join our hosts and our guests. Over to you, Lata.
Thank you, Donna. And welcome to my guests for the first half of the show, Connie Alexander and Audrey Gamble, co-founders and co-executive directors of Gateway Educational Services, calling in from Lompoc. Thank you for being here today, Connie and Audrey.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Connie, tell us about Gateway Educational Services.
So Gateway Educate, we are a learning center, and what that really means is that we provide intensive academic support for students for reading, for math, writing. We have a college readiness program. We're fortunate to have two locations, one in Goleta and one in Lompoc. So we're at our Lompoc Center, and we... You know, we started this spring of 2009 is when we started, and our model is being a nonprofit. And so many times when people think about those additional services and support and tutoring and all that, it's very much in a for-profit model, but we are using a nonprofit model. So that's a little bit about, like, what we specifically do.
Did you both grow up in Lompoc? Or in Santa Barbara?
I grew up in Lompoc, yes, Audrey. I'm from here, so I know this area very well. And I'm proud to be from Lompoc in Santa Barbara County.
I grew up in the Bay Area and came to the area first in Santa Barbara. And like I said, now we have the Learning Center in both places, Goleta and Lompoc. So, yeah.
Wonderful. So what inspired you both, Connie, Audrey, to start Gateway Educational Services?
Oh, wow. Okay. So basically access and opportunity. We saw a need to provide academic support to students that weren't necessarily getting the information in a broader view than other students. And so being able to offer that to them, and also providing the academic support on a much deeper level than just homework help. We're
assessment-based.
Yeah, we might have to roll that back. we are assessment-based, and so we teach skills. And so those skills cross all subjects in school and in college as well. So once you learn something like a skill, no one can ever take that away from you. And so that's something that we're really proud of, to provide skills and strategies to navigate the school system.
And what does assessment-based mean?
That means that each student is given an assessment, basically a test, to find out where their strengths and weaknesses are. So our model is one-to-one. We don't do group tutoring. We do one-to-one for every student so that we're able to customize a learning plan specifically to address and meet their needs.
So were you both already involved in education before you came to this, Connie?
I spent a lot of years in higher education. And I think being in, and then I was ready to transition to other things. And in meeting Audrey, it was like, yep, this is exactly what I want to do next. Because what I could see is that young people were coming into college and they didn't have the full skills they needed. And particularly seeing the struggle for young people of color, And seeing that that was an area that they needed attention, they needed support. And so for me, that background for me in education is just being my family. I come from a long line of educators, and so that's just kind of in my DNA. That's where that came from for me.
I can empathize there as an educator as well in higher ed. Audrey, what's your background in education?
Well, me and Connie met through a mutual friend, and I had already been involved with a learning center that was a for-profit model. And that didn't fit well for me because I could see that students needed a little bit more than was being offered. And also, the price point was really something that I was very concerned about. So when we met, we decided, well, you know what, let's try a different model that would be able to allow students to access us in an easier way and a more feasible way financially for parents. And so that's how we created Gateway Educational Services. So it was an easy decision to transition from a for-profit model to a nonprofit model, because that fit well with my heart.
Wonderful. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that transition, because we do live on the Central Coast in what I've heard called a nonprofit corridor, where we have one of the highest numbers of nonprofits per capita. So this is work I find that a lot of people are doing or want to go into. So as a nonprofit, how do you fund Gateway Services?
I could speak to that for a second. This is Connie. Nonprofit is the model. We are still nonprofit businesses. We are businesses. We have to, you know, we have to budget. We have to, you know, do as best we can with the resources that we do have. And so we do have three ways that, you know, families can access us. They have a few ways they can access us. So we have a sliding scale model that does help pay for those things. And that hopefully allows any family to access us. We also go out and we raise a lot of scholarship money. I mean, we write a lot of grants, and we have individual donations and individual donors, and that's really what helps us to be able to do this, because our intention is that any family that walks through the door, let's figure out if we can help them access us. Like, is there a way we can make this possible for everyone? And we have other parents that are at the more, I would say, top, so to speak, of the scale, and they are happy to support the other parents, so they're happy to pay if they can afford more, because they understand that it's supporting everyone. We have a work-study contract with UCSB, which we love having, and that allows us to hire young people to work, and that work-study contract really does help us lower how much our expenses are. But, you know, anybody who's getting into or starting a nonprofit, you have to really be ready to have a very entrepreneurial spirit about yourself. You got to be ready to pivot. Something comes up, we have to pivot. We have to figure out a better way to do it. We have to figure out a way to fundraise, all of those things. So it's a life journey. You know, it's not for the faint of heart, and it's a life journey.
I appreciate you putting it in those terms, and what a great model and example you have with Gateway for that, not just in terms of entrepreneurship, but being of and for the community. I appreciate your really community-based model. So Gateway, what inspired the name Gateway, or why Gateway?
Let's see. Well, Gateway is, it's like a doorway. So it visualizing Gateway, I could say that the door is open, the window is open, there is an opening somewhere that would allow us to provide academic support to those who need it. And the door is open to everyone. Like Connie was saying, we find a way to help every student that walks through the door, every family that walks through the door, to provide the support, not just academically, but holistically, because we believe that once a student is struggling academically, so is the entire family. And so once we touch that one student, the entire family is included in our Gateway family. And we just do everything that we can possible to make sure that they get what they need.
One of my favorite quotes that kind of helps inspire this too is from George Washington Carver. Carver said that education is the key to unlock the golden door of freedom. Mm. And in fact, that's something we're using for something we just launched called the Carver Society, which is grade 7-8. It's a STEM pathways program that we're doing, especially in Lompoc, focusing on Black African-American students and trying to help them with the pathway towards STEM jobs. Lompoc has incredible, like, if you're in Lompoc, you feel those rockets go up, right? Mm-hmm. You're anywhere, you're like, boom. Yet very, very few African-Americans are in any of the jobs that support any of this. And so we just launched this last year with a grant through Uplift Catalyst. And so we are appreciative of them and to help us build this foundation. And so, yeah, Carver was right that there's nothing, and I think Audrey said it, like no one can ever take that from you. And so that's always in our mind, that this unlocks so much for young people and for their families.
Wonderful. Yeah, how inspiring, really. And what a great quote you have from George Washington Carver as well. So you've talked a little bit about this, but who are most of your families at Gateway?
Well, most of our clientele at Gateway are similar to the demographic of the Central Coast. However, we are the largest provider for academic support of our Black and African American families. Because this demographic does not get the amount of information or access to information as other demographics, we feel a special place in our heart is to provide that. And they're very receptive because a lot of times we'll call their parents and say, hey, we've got this program here, or did you know about this information? And a lot of times it's no. And so we provide access to all this information in whatever medium we can use. We call them, we'll text them, we'll shoot them an email and put out flyers, whatever we can do to let them know that we are here to fully support them and their needs and the needs of their students.
What great.
But I do say in the afternoon, you open our door and it looks like the global nation in there. Mm. When people open the door and like there's everybody in here. Which says that everybody at some point needs help, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we love being able to do, is being able to spread that. So, yeah, we always say that, oh, open our door in the afternoon. It looks like the global village in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent.
And we often say the smartest people ask for help.
That's right.
I like that. I'm going to remember that. Yes. I'm Lotta Murty with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. My guests for the first half of today's show are the co-founders and co-executive directors of Gateway Educational Services, Audrey Gamble and Connie Alexander, who are calling in from Lompoc. And we are talking about Gateway Educational Services, a learning center based in Santa Barbara County. Listeners, this is a pre-recorded show, so we are not able to take your calls, but please email any questions to voices@kcbx.org, and we will forward them to our guests. So I would love for you to share some success stories with families and students in Gateway. I'm sure you have many over the last 15 plus years. Can you share a couple with us, Audrey, Connie?
You know, we were talking about this, and sometimes we stop and we say, oh, wow, you know, over the years, it's hundreds and hundreds of students now. And really, the pathway for us is college readiness, right? That we get them sometimes when they're really young. And the fun part now is that we just started our 13th cohort for college readiness, okay? And that's a small group of juniors that we come in and do work with, and we get them through all their college applications and test prep and all that. And so I can think of one young man who was a student in Santa Barbara, and we had been asking the counselor from the high school that we were near for just names of students who might want to be in it. So he brought us some names, and it was like the end of the day. We were about to close, and he said, yeah, here's these people, but there's this one kid. He's kind of a pain, you know, I don't know. And we looked at each other, and we said, we'll take the pain. We'll take the pain. He called him a pain in the butt. We'll take him. And I cannot even begin to tell you what an incredible, extraordinary young man he is. We're so proud of him. And he came from a really difficult start.
The pain.
And did not have much support. Mm. And we were able to get him to college, get him in and out in 4 years. He graduated from the University of San Francisco, and he's gone on to have a terrific beginning career with Adobe. He's now left that career and transitioned to some other things. But his story always stands out to us as one that would have otherwise been tossed to the side. But his work ethic, his desire, and his deep gratitude for the work that we're doing, we see him on and off and talk to him. We're still, you know, a part of our lives. And, you know, I often say, and I said it to him not too long ago, I said, hey, I want you to know that as hard as this work is for me and Audrey and the things that we have to do, we look at it and say, all of it is worth it, all the sacrifice, if it was just for one person, and that happens to be you. Mm. But if all of this was just for you, it was absolutely worth it for me. Because he is an absolutely extraordinary person, and I see everything he's doing now and how he's trying to help so many other people. And he says, I got that from you, to go out and not just take what I have, but to go spread it and try and help other people. So, you know, he's just one that I can think of that always stands out in my mind.
That's so
and
inspiring.
And additionally, he came back to help tutor the younger kids. And so he was able to provide his own journey story to these younger kids. Hey, look at me. I look like you. If I could do it, you could do it. And that's just such a warming feeling.
Yeah, and yesterday it was the sweetest story. Audrey was working with a little one who's just really struggling, who trying to learn how to read. She's about 6 or 7. And right behind her is one who is in our college readiness program, who's getting some tutoring. But she actually, the high school student, the high school junior, started when she was that young. And so Audrey turned to her and said, see, look at her sitting there. She did this. And she could turn to those little ones and said, you know what? I was actually just like you. And now I'm getting ready to go to college. And that, like, is the most beautiful moment. I was on the other side of the Learning Center, and I heard it, and it almost made me cry, because that's exactly what we're trying to do in terms of building community. And that little one could, like, look at her. She could look at someone, another Latina who looks like her, and say, yeah, okay, maybe I should be doing this too.
Absolutely. The last thing she said was, I want to go to college.
I heard her say that. That is
beautiful. And it speaks to the importance of intergenerational inspiration and mentoring. But just for my clarification, earlier you said that this is one-on-one, but then do the students also get to learn from others in a group setting?
Just in the college readiness program, there's a little bit of group work, because that dynamic, we start a cohort, and that's like usually 6 to 8 juniors, and they do, so they have some group work that they do together, which is really fun. And in fact, it's on these particular Saturdays, and this Saturday we had it, and like they were working on math together and kind of teaching each other, because the tutors in that program specifically are UCSB juniors and seniors, and we were sharing with them about this idea that when you get to college, a lot of what happens is you're teaching yourself, and you can find study groups, and we wanted them to really start to understand that model of how important finding a great study group is and learning how to process the work and teach each other back. That's such a huge gain. So, yeah, the younger students, definitely one-to-one, happy to have those juniors start this model of what it's like to be in a group situation.
Excellent. So when you were talking about skills earlier, you're not just talking about reading and writing and math, but study skills as well, it sounds
absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely. Yeah. Study skills, organizational skills, time management skills. When you're going through elementary, middle, junior high school, and high school, you know, you're handheld through everything. You know, you're told when to do, what to do, how to do, and sometimes why to do. But once you get into college, you're given a book, a date, and, you know, this is when you're going to take your test. And so we absolutely have to teach students exactly what to expect when they go to college, and how to navigate through college in a way that won't be stressful to them. Because that's a big factor when it comes to college and test taking and all of those things. So as we spoke about holistically approaching the student, that's part of that aspect of it.
Wonderful. And so when you say college readiness, do you mean 4-year colleges, 2-year colleges, both, any college?
I think, well, our model is really focused on 4-year access. We love the community college system. We think it's fantastic. We're glad that that's there. But statistically, we have learned that for particularly students of color, those who enter a 4-year college, straight to a 4-year college, have a higher graduation rate. Mm. They leave college with less debt because remember that financial aid is 4 years, right? And if you don't do it out of, you know, the 5th year or 6th year, it's completely out of pocket. So we encourage our students to take advantage of dual enrollment. So we really like the idea of them utilizing that first step with community colleges to do dual enrollment. So we are constantly preaching about and trying to get them signed up to take dual enrollment classes, and that, I think that's an amazing opportunity for young people. And then we really do want them to transition and go straight to 4-year colleges and universities and finish in 4 years. And in fact, I think we're at, like, it's over 90-some% of our students that do go absolutely finish in 4 years. I think it's like 98% of them, of the mm-hmm. hundreds that we sent, finish in 4 years.
Wow, another success story. That's excellent. Very good. So I do want to make sure before our first half of the show is over that our listeners get to hear where they can find out more about Gateway and how they can support it. So can you tell us that information, please?
Absolutely. Our website is gatewayeducationalservices.org. We're on social media, Instagram, Gateway Educational Services SB. Our phone number, 805-895-1153, is our main line. So, and our email address, gatewaycamps@gmail.com.
gatewaycamps@gmail.com.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Very good. So in our last few minutes, I'm wondering if each of you, Connie and Audrey, can talk about what it's meant for you to be Black women leading this organization, particularly in South Santa Barbara County.
You want to go first, Connie, or you go first?
I'll go. Okay. So, I just happen to be Black, living in and being from this county. I think for me, it has been an absolute pleasure to be from here, go away, living in other areas, and then coming back to give back to this community in a way that is going to leave a legacy. My children went to schools here, and so they've been involved in Gateway from its inception, and it just it means a lot to me to be able to see my old friends and their kids and their grandkids come through and, oh yeah, I know you, I know your family. Who's your family? Let me see. And just to connect with people from who you've known for a long time and help their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And also those friends of mine are willing to engage in what Gateway is doing because it's their community as well. So sharing all of the wealth with the community that you're from, it couldn't feel any better.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think I'm so, I have so much gratitude that this is really my legacy piece here. What we've done with Gateway feels like the legacy that I want to leave, and the legacy of really changing the trajectory for so many young people and so many families. So that it means a lot to be personally that way. Being able to establish things for the first time that haven't existed is really an incredible part of this for me too. Being able to do things like we've got this new STEM Pathways program. That's amazing. We also host every summer a Black Youth Leadership Summit in August. And by the way, that's August 15th. It'll be at Santa Barbara City College. Give it a little plug there. And this will be the third or fourth year that we're doing the Black Youth Leadership Summit, bringing kids grades 5 through 12 together. And it's really become a hub for the community. Parents come, the parents track. It's a huge day. And that, knowing that Gateway has really become this hub for our community, like so many entry points of people who come in and out of the community, it's really an honor how often people say, oh, you got to meet, you know, Connie and Audrey, you got to meet them. Like, this is what they're doing. And they can plug you into all these other things that are happening in the community. So, and in the nonprofit community, the fact that, you know, people respect our work, and it's, again, even within that nonprofit community, we've done things to do leadership things for other leaders of color who are in the nonprofit space. And so for me, it's about that legacy and being able to, at some point and someday, turn it over to some others that will continue that legacy.
And can I add that, that the summit that we're going to be holding in August, give us that date again, Connie?
August 15th.
Yes. So, you know, that was such an extraordinary experience for us, Lada. It was only supposed to be a one-time thing 4 years ago. So at the end of the first one, we got so much praise and so much joy and so much feedback about how wonderful and inclusive it was that they continued to ask us to come back. And so here we are in our fourth year doing it again.
That's beautiful. I would like to thank my guests for the first half of this show, co-founders and co-executive directors of Gateway Educational Services of Santa Barbara, Connie Alexander and Audrey Gamble. Before we talk to restaurateur Fabian Tefera of Ebony Slow during the second half of the show, we are going to take a short break to hear from our studio. Over to you, Donna.
Central Coast Voices continues with our host, Lata Murty.
Welcome back to Central Coast Voices, and welcome to my guest for the second half of the show, restaurateur Fabian Tefera of Ebony Slow, another Black-led organization, a Black-led business on California's Central Coast. Listeners, we are unable to take your calls during this pre-recorded show. but please email voices@kcbx.org with any questions about Gateway Educational Services or Ebony Slow, and we will forward those questions to our guests. So, Fabian, thank you for being here today. Tell us the story of Ebony Slow or Ebony San Luis Obispo.
Well, thank you for having me. So the short version of Ebony San Luis Obispo is basically I've lived in SLO for about 9 years now. And when I first moved here, I was looking to create a community around me because I didn't know anybody. So I would sort of cook in my backyard and invite friends. And so we called it Ethiopian Night. So that was just kind of like the beginning, the seed of how Ebony got started. And then fast forward a few years, I did a pop-up with my friend. And then I always say, I don't remember exactly, but it sold out in like 10 to 15 minutes. And then we did another one again, and it was the same thing. So we're like, oh, okay, there's a demand for Ethiopian food in this town, and I just love Ethiopian food. So fast forward another few years, I decided to open up Ebony with my aunts and my best friend, who are all business partners right now. And that's sort of the background of Ebony. And then the main thing once we started Ebony was we wanted to focus on healthy food, which happens to be Ethiopian food. So health and clean food is our main thing. And then we know Ethiopian food, so we combined the two and it became Ebony.
Wonderful. So tell us more about the food and how it's healthy and clean.
So the food is basically Ethiopian food, which is something it's sort of different sauces and different vegetable dishes, and you eat everything Ethiopian with this spongy fermented bread called injera. So you use that for everything, including the salad or anything on your plate. And our food is clean because we don't use seed oils, and everything is organic. We source all our veggies from the farmers, and we make our injera very fresh every day, a few times a day, which is sort of unheard of. So we just kind of like clean, good food, and we cook it the way we would eat it at home. So that's what makes us healthy, but healthy doesn't necessarily, I think we've had, healthy has a bad reputation. People assume healthy is not delicious. So we just decided healthy and delicious can be a thing, and that's what we're doing, and it's been successful so far.
So you make the injera several times a day. That's a
yes,
lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but it's also just so that everybody gets fresh injera. I hate it when I go to a bakery like in the afternoon and you're getting the bread that was baked in the morning. So we just kind of want to make everybody feel like they can come at any time of the day and get fresh injera.
Wow. Yeah. Going back a bit to what you shared before, and this is a great story of community and food, right, in San Luis Obispo. So what brought you to this area?
We moved here because my husband was teaching at Cal Poly. We got transferred because of that. And before we came here, we were in North Carolina, and I've never even heard of San Luis Obispo. So I didn't know where I was going. I knew California, I knew LA, I knew the big cities. I looked it up online, and it like looked too good to be true. And I'm like, oh, they're just, you know, showing the best of the best. But I come here and it's basically what I've seen in magazines. And it's all the stuff that I saw was here, which is surprising. And yeah, so we moved here basically almost 10 years ago now because my husband got a job at Cal Poly.
Wonderful. So you started as a pop-up, you said.
Mm-hmm.
So for our listeners who aren't familiar, what's a pop-up or what was the pop-up at that time?
So the pop-up I did with my friend, so a few years ago, I took my friend to Ethiopia with me when I went for the summer. And we were there and we had such a great time, and we were just kind of like talking about spices and things. And when we came back, we're like, why don't we just do a pop-up? Because everybody around us and at the time loved Ethiopian food, so we just wanted to see. So the pop-up was basically you go to a place that's not your restaurant. We did it a Satellite of Love on South Hagere, I think. So he was the most gracious host. He had us there, and we were there. We were supposed to be there for a few hours. So we cooked the food, brought tables and things, and went there as a pop-up. And it lasted, like I said, 10 minutes. The food was gone. But that was basically what a pop-up is. You just show up at some place that's not your own, and you sell food or whatever it is for a few hours, and then you pack up and you go.
10 minutes, wow.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised, because I've had the food and it's delicious. And I really appreciate it as a vegetarian, because I could eat almost anything on the menu. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure those of you listeners who have had the food before would agree. So when you were a pop-up, were you called Ebony?
Yes, we were called Ebony. The Ebony name came up because, like I said, when I traveled with my friend to Ethiopia, and ebony is a wood. It's like a dark colored wood in Ethiopia that they use to make a lot of the touristy things. So everywhere we go, somebody would be like, oh, buy this ebony wood something. So there were a lot of gift items that were made out of ebony. So the word ebony kept on coming by everywhere we went. And I just loved that name, so we decided to make it the name of the restaurant.
Okay, very good. So you grew up in Ethiopia, yes?
Yes, I was 12 when I moved to New York.
To New York?
Mm-hmm.
And then North Carolina?
No, I lived in New York for 20-something years, and then got married, and we moved to Hawaii, and then Savannah, Georgia, North Carolina, then San Luis Obispo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But it sounds like this is the most beautiful place.
Yeah, we love San Luis Obispo. Hawaii, of course, was gorgeous as well.
Yes, yeah. Okay.
And New York.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they each have their own beauty, to be sure. But unfortunately, our listeners can't eat at Ebony Slow at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And can you share why? What's happened?
Yeah, so we started out at a commercial kitchen about 2 years ago, and then 2 years later, we were approached by the owners of Bliss to say they wanted to leave the space and they wanted us to move in there, and it was just a huge, wonderful surprise. So we moved there 2 years ago almost, and we've been in downtown SLO for the last 2 years and loved it there, but we had to move. We just shut down at the end of January. We have to move because the building is going to be the museum now. So we had to unfortunately leave that space. And we at the moment don't have a place right now. So we're in storage. So hopefully we're hoping to come back up. I mean, if all goes well, maybe April, but I have no specific dates at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But so we had to leave, and now we're looking for a new spot to get going again.
And so you want a stationary space, and I ask this because I've seen some businesses have to give up their space, restaurant businesses, mm-hmm. and then become a food truck. Mm-hmm. For example, was that something you considered, or
we have not considered a food truck, because a food truck in itself is also a different kind of work.
Mm.
We want a permanent place because it's a few women running the business. So I feel like just the food truck is a huge concept to me, because you would have to drive it around, I'm guessing. And
oh, yes.
It's a truck.
This is
and,
true.
Yeah. When you think about the detail, a food truck is, I don't know, a bit complicated for me. So we just want a permanent spot where we can go and create what we create.
Sure. So as you are looking for a new space, a permanent space, how can our listeners support Ebony Slow?
Well, we have a lot of regulars, and the whole community has been supporting us so far. So we will appreciate any leads or any space that people see that they can let us know. That's been helpful, because most of the places we went to look at has been something that somebody saw and gave us a call. So just let us know. You can let us know on our website or email or Instagram and say, hey, I saw the space that's available. Maybe you can kind of go look at it. I feel like we've seen most of the spaces in SLO, which it's not a lot, but you never know, something might come up. And so any information would be amazing.
Excellent. So listeners, you heard it. You can help Ebony SLO find its new home. This is Lotta Murty with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's show and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It's available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you will find this show and many others to choose from. And there's still time for your emailed questions about Ebony SLO. And if you caught the first half of the show, Gateway Educational Services, two Black-led business organizations on California's Central Coast. Please send your questions to voices@kcbx.org, and we will forward them to our guests, as today's show is pre-recorded. My guest here in the studio with me for the second half of today's show is restaurateur Fabian Tafera of Ebony SLO. And we are talking about the history, current circumstances, and future of Ebony, which has brought authentic Ethiopian cuisine to California's Central Coast. So, Fabian, tell our listeners again where they can find Ebony SLO online.
So our website is www.ebony/slow.com, and we're very active on Instagram, which is at Ebony SLO. So you can reach us there. You can kind of follow what we're doing, and we're going to, as soon as we find a place, that's where we're going to announce it. But I feel like, yeah, the website and the Instagram is the best place to find us.
Very good. Do you have a goal date for finding a new place, or you're letting it happen as it happens?
Well, we were hoping not to be in storage for more than a month. We actually never wanted to go into storage, but unfortunately we had to go into storage. So hopefully by mid-March or April, we want to get started, because once you lose momentum, it's kind of hard to get back into the restaurant business. So we're trying to just see if something comes up very soon. But yeah, we don't have, it all depends on us finding a place.
We actually have a question that came in from our studio. Are you only looking for new places in San Luis Obispo, or are you willing to consider other locations on the Central Coast?
We thought about that a lot. We're hoping to be in San Luis Obispo because that's where it's sort of like central to all the other places. But we were also considering Los Osos and maybe Morro Bay, but I think SLO would be ideal. If not, then we'll look into Los Osos or the neighboring towns.
So can you say a little more about why SLO would be ideal? You talked about how fast your food sold the pop-up, mm-hmm. and then how popular it was afterwards in the restaurant space. Why do you think that is?
Because I feel like we do catch a lot of people. You know, everybody that lives in the area kind of ends up coming to SLO because SLO is the big city. We get a lot of tourists that pass through between the Bay and LA. So I feel like SLO is very central because Ethiopian food is not something that people have every day. So we figured the bigger the city, the better. But we are open to possibly Baywood, Los Osos as well.
Okay. We're hearing from the studio. There's a here's a plug for Paso that has a huge wine and restaurant crowd.
Paso would actually be amazing, but it is a drive, and most of our employees actually live in SLO. We all live in SLO, and a few of our employees don't drive.
I see.
And they're a critical part of Ebony, so we have to be considering that as well. But yeah, I would love to be in Paso, minus the commute.
All right. So what have been some of customers' favorite dishes?
So our top sellers are our spicy red lentil. That's just a crowd pleaser. Even people who don't like, who don't do spicy would enjoy the spicy red lentils because it has a ton of caramelized onions. Mm-hmm. So there's like a good combination between spice and a little bit of the sweetness from the onions. Followed by our mushroom dips, which is mushroom cooked the way we cook meat usually, with all the same spices as a meat dish. So those two, I would say, are our top sellers. And then potatoes and shiro, which is a chickpea paste sauce. Those two are sort of like our second sellers. And our tea, our iced tea, is one of the best, which is my favorite.
It is good.
Yeah.
I've had it. I have to say my favorite, and I don't know the name of it, so maybe you can help me out. Mm-hmm. I went for brunch once with my kids, and actually through an event that Captain Pat Walker organized, mm-hmm. right? And he was here for the first part of this series, in my January show. And it was like eggs, mm-hmm. but it wasn't eggs. And it was silky, and it had the texture of eggs, but even better. It was so good. What was that?
Yes, that was when we were doing Sunday brunches, and that is our... I guess we call it, it's not a scrambled egg, but it tastes like an egg. It's has a texture like an egg, but it's made out of chickpeas.
Oh, that was the chickpea. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And that one, we did brunch for, I don't know, almost a year and a half or maybe a year. And that was on our brunch menu on Sundays. We haven't done brunch in a little bit, but yeah, we would hopefully bring that back when we have a new spot.
Please tell me the name of that dish.
It's called buticha.
Buticha.
Yeah.
Delicious. I want that back. Help Ebony Slow find a new place so I can have that again. In our last few minutes, Fabian, tell us what it's meant for you to be an Ethiopian American woman along with your aunts and a restaurateur here in San Luis Obispo.
Well, our experience in San Luis Obispo in general has been amazing, but as a restaurant owner in SLO, I wasn't surprised, but it's been so amazing. The community has been so supportive. I would say 90%. Don't quote me on that, but very high percentage of our people that come to Ebony are the same people over and over again. So it's almost like a community space. So it's been welcoming. Anytime we need something, the community comes and supports us. People have been so kind and so wonderful. So it's been such an amazing experience. I've never owned a restaurant. I know nothing about running a restaurant. And that we're learning as we go, and we've been supported from the beginning. So that's why we feel like when we lost this place, we're like, oh, you know, we have so many people supporting us. It didn't feel like we were doing it alone. So it's been great. No complaints.
And in my experience, Ebony Slow as well has been very supportive of the San Luis Obispo community. The tea ceremony, I think it was a tea ceremony.
The coffee ceremony.
The coffee ceremony, not tea. I love tea, but I had the coffee because it was such a community mm-hmm. experience. Can you talk a little bit about the coffee ceremony?
Yes. So coffee ceremony in general in Ethiopia is something you do in a community. You don't drink coffee alone. It's kind of unheard of. So you just kind of sit around and somebody makes the coffee. So we start from roasting the green beans. You actually start from washing the beans. Then you roast them and then you grind them and then you brew coffee. So by the time you get your cup, it might be, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, but that's the whole point. You take your time, you sit around with family and friends, you're not rushed. And traditionally, that time is usually used as discussing what needs to happen in the community, who needs help. Mm. So it's just time to talk about your immediate community, talk about what the needs are, you know, good news, bad news, there's a baby, there's a funeral. That's just kind of a place you talked about life, especially for my grandmother's generation. That's how everything got resolved around coffee, because it is a long ceremony. So you have the time, and it goes from one person's house to the next. So at Ebony, we did basically that. We opened up a community space on Sunday. If you came in, you can just have coffee, join whoever's there, have, you know, a conversation, a good time, and a cup of coffee, and you see the entire ceremony happen in front of you. So it's pretty cool.
That's beautiful. I just remember, I think it was one of your aunts who brought out the coffee, and it was just shared with such joy. Mm-hmm. The joy was contagious, and I still remember that, and I thought, wow, what, I mean, there's just so happiness in the fact we were all there, mm-hmm. gathered around the table and sharing from this one platter, mm-hmm. right, of coffee. And so I love to hear the story behind that. Before we end the show, and I say that with sadness because I want to hear more. I'm learning so much. And you and your aunts have brought so much to the community. So thank you for that. What do you want to leave our listeners with as a takeaway?
I first want to say thank you to the community. Thank you for all the help, and thank you for making us feel like we're not doing this alone. Currently, we do feel very supported. And the other thing is, come and see us. Try the food. I'm pretty sure you would love it, and then you'll come back and try being, you know, coming in and being part of the community, because it's fun, it's good food, it's fun, good music, and we usually have really good, interesting events too when we can. So, and it's also a community space. Reach out if you need a space to do a meaningful event. We're happy to extend whatever space we're going to be in. It's yours as well.
Thank you, Faven. I want to thank today's guests, restaurateur and co-owner of Ebony Slow, Faben Tefera, and also Connie Alexander and Audrey Gamble of Gateway Educational Services, who were on during the first half of the show. We have been talking about Gateway and Ebony Slow, or Ebony San Luis Obispo, and what it means to be Black leaders and business owners on California's Central Coast. Next week, Thursday, March 5th, from 1 to 2 p.m., join Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik as he talks to guests involved and concerned with environmental issues on California's Central Coast. Central Coast Voices is produced with the support of KCBX Public Radio. I'm Lata Murthy. Thank you for joining us today.